So we will call the Administration Committee for March 20th, 2019 to order. We have present Alderman Peterson, Alderman Transier, myself, staff, and Mayor Purcell. So we'll start. I see no one here for citizens' comments, so we'll continue on. We have minutes for correction or approval from March 20th. Any comments on those? All right, so we will take those approved as presented then.
I do that sometimes too.
All right. New business 2019-18 monthly budget report for March and April of 2019. Rob? Or Bart?
Yeah.
You doing that one?
I'll take that one.
You'll take that one.
So skip over the March one because the April one has the March figures in it. So you've got, look at sales taxes first. I scroll to find it. So it's like the first page. It's going to be a little bit further along in your packet, Dan.
Give me a page number, approximately.
I'm on a PDF here.
Is it what page going. In the PDF?
63.
Oh, there we go.
Keep going, keep going. Skip past that part, or be back behind it a little
Got
bit.
It. Thank you, that was very kind of you.
Keep going, flip back, keep going. Yeah, no. Keep going. Dozens. Keep going. A little bit.
Who said 63? Mm-hmm. Right on the PDF.
Keep going.
That's 63.
I guess, yeah. Keep going. Let's try this one. Let's see. Yeah, let me flip over here. Let's see.
This is nice because you can go straight to the page. Just type it.
That's nice. I like making
yeah.
notes, so.
Yeah,
this is literally where we started.
Yep. So, and they're usually a little easier to read earlier in the fiscal year because there's less columns, so we can orient the page differently.
Right.
So, this is every line item in the budget. It is a full 12 columns and 12 months worth of the budget report. However, there are payrolls, there are bill runs that have been approved by City Council at the next probably 3 to 4 meetings, and some other things that will still show up in the fiscal year 19 audit report. So you shouldn't necessarily take this budget report as you know what the audit numbers are going to look like. And additionally, some of the numbers in this report are cash basis, and we account on the accrual basis. So, like sales taxes, some of the numbers that are listed in May of 2018 and June of 2018, those columns, are actually going to show up in the fiscal year 18 audit numbers. So it's not totally apples to apples with an audit, is what I'm trying to get across here. But it is, when you compare this budget report month to month, it's useful for kind of taking a look at generally where your departments are lining up with operating expenditures, how revenues are sort of performing, although there's a lot of context that we try to give in historical performance of those revenues. So usually we start off this budget report just by talking about sales taxes, which is our most volatile revenue stream. And so there's that March column in there. It's like $287,000. It's like the highest amount. That's your Christmas sales. So it's December consumer receipts reported to the state in January. So you've got 30 days generally to report sales tax info to the state. State takes a couple months to crunch the numbers before they then submit it back to us in March. And so we receive it in March. And so that's why it shows up in the March column because it's shown on the cash basis, which means when you get it, you put it in your budget report that way. And if I remember off the top of my head, I want to say that this Christmas season was actually down from last year. It was like 10% almost or something. It was some abnormal dollar amount. Although, if I remember correctly, the previous Christmas season was much higher than normal. So, it's a little bit of a regression to the mean. When you take the April column, and what will be the May column, which is something that just got released in the past week and has not shown up on the budget report yet, Both of those months, if I remember correctly, one of them was $7,000 above historical averages. The other one was $11,000 above historical averages, which is significant. And so the fiscal year numbers are actually in line or better than we had budgeted overall. So, you know, in the past, we've kind of tried to look at trends each month to see, you know, if we're underperforming historical averages, and Rob and I's different modeling systems. You know, it's something we talk about and kind of say, like, hey, we need to watch this. You know, the budget number is going to be a little bit lower than we expected, but in general, it's still positive. So, and non-home rule sales tax, which is the other large line item immediately below it, generally follows those same trends. So there's a little bit of difference percentage-wise in growth just because, you know, the numbers are different, so they cover different purchases. So if the one type of purchase is up or down, then those numbers might not necessarily match on a percentage basis from month to month. So that's the big one. That's kind of what we look at each month, just because, you know, Rob and I are sitting on the Illinois Department of Revenue website about the first week of every month. I hit F5 and refresh and do hard refreshes every few minutes just to see if it comes up. I don't know if you do. So, but as soon as it pops up, you know, we plug it into our modeling spreadsheets, take a look at historical performance, and then figure out if it's something to be concerned about or something we can just say, oh, okay, we got the revenue in and it's good to go. So that's usually the first thing we hit on. Second things we hit on, just if there's any abnormalities, really throughout the entire budget report. You know, most of the other revenue streams, property taxes, you know what those are. They come in, you levy them, and then you get them in each year. And I think 6 disbursements over the years. Right. There's a couple large disbursements. Those are generally stable. Income taxes, although they can be volatile based on the state budget, they're per capita based. So, you know, we get like $105 or something like that per resident. So as we've grown in population, we can estimate the increase in that. And, you know, the state's economy will fluctuate a little bit here and there, and maybe it's, you know, 2% growth instead of 1.8%. But, you know, generally those are pretty much in line. Although I think I read one of the Capital Facts blog that there was a huge influx of income taxes in April of this past year. Having to do with something to do with the federal tax reform and the way that state income taxes get paid. So they received a huge influx of money that they didn't think they were going to get. So the state is actually doing like $1.5 billion better than they expected, which some of that trickles down to us. So it's modest. It's not a huge dollar amount. So that's something that's notable. And then use tax, which is out-of-state online purchases. So sales tax, we get a percentage of that sales tax, and it's per capita based, is outperforming expectations because of the Wayfair versus North Dakota decision, which was sales tax sourcing that went up to the Supreme Court last year. So now there's a larger pot of purchases that states get online sales tax paid for, so we get a portion of that too. So, you know, the best professional organizations over the past few years have been trying to estimate what that impact would be. I think they've pinned it down that it might be a 5 to 10% increase in use tax, which I think it's $500,000 annually is kind of what we expect in use tax. So not a huge dollar amount or a material dollar amount, but, you know, a little bit of extra revenue. But I think it's been outperforming even those expectations, which is a good sign, too. So just for whatever that's worth, like on those online sales taxes, there's still a pot of purchases that should be sales taxed for online that are not currently being collected sales tax. So the state is trying to go through and amend their sales tax sourcing rules such that it will apply to a larger pot of legitimate, like, retail-type purchases on out-of-state online things. So then we would get a little bit extra money from that, too. So that's it from the revenue side. On the expenditure side, it's kind of generally what we've seen each year. Again, those numbers in each department are not going to be final. There's still a couple bill runs. There's going to be things that get journaled back and forth. Additionally, this is not a exported report from our accounting system. This is something that Rob has to do some manual data entry on. So every once in a while, there's an error or something. So if you see something that seems out of whack, happy to answer questions and see if anybody Hasn't he?
Am I allowed to ask questions?
Absolutely.
Thanks. I'll probably ask this a dozen times. At least I'll forget. What's the difference between the municipal sales tax and the non-home rule sales tax?
Municipal sales tax is the 1% that we're entitled to through state law.
That's the 1%.
Yep. Right there. The non-home rule is also 1%, but that's the one that we authorized by referendum.
But that's more exclusions?
Yes.
Yes.
Is it? What's excluded? Is it the 1% from the states that include food or not?
I think it does include food, yeah. And the non-home rule does not.
Correct. Yeah, because pretty much all the additional sales taxes exclude food.
Food, drug, and qualifying medical devices, I believe.
And a lot of times automobiles, too.
Correct. Right.
Yeah. Okay, so the 1% is pretty much on everything.
Yeah.
And the other is, those are the additional ones we passed.
Yeah, it's on general merchandise, the non-home rule. Whereas
does
municipal.
That include some of these different, and you've gone through this really, but does that include some of the different funds for some of the different shopping areas you have higher rates? Or are those different ones?
Different line items.
Okay.
Yeah, those are slightly further down. Yep. They have those
business
DDD
district
tax.
Right.
Those
oh,
are
the
down there.
Yeah.
Oh, so I should look further.
It's all right.
I've looked at this thing a dozen times already. I see that number was good.
Do you expect the use tax to continue to decrease on a yearly basis due to online shopping being the preferred method?
So there's two answers to that. One is yes, in general, I would subscribe to that theory. But two, from a budget perspective, I think we've got like 2% going forward as an annual increase, just to be super conservative with it.
Although you'll see a large year-over-year increase, almost 20%, I think, from FY18 numbers once the audit's done.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, whether that'll continue, I hope it does, but obviously we were not projecting 20% into perpetuity.
Right.
So,
but would we see an equalization between our municipal sales tax and
right.
the... Okay, yeah. So at some point,
right.
it's got a balance, I would think.
Yeah, that would get into our like store level reports, which we haven't done since the last time we met.
Yeah.
Just kind of seeing if like Target is decreasing or Dick's when it was open, to see how that was being impacted. So yeah, I mean the trend is definitely going that way. So
okay,
we're not assuming the growth in either one of them yet.
Because that's going to take a while before that really finds a balance, I think.
Right.
And we're still a ways away from that. Because you have places like Target, who is doing online sales now for
mm-hmm.
local pickup. It's the exact same pool.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of how are you doing it. I think that'll have an effect, but it's just a matter of which pool of money, which tax pool it's going to go into. So, but that's going to take a while to balance up. Any other comments on the budget report?
So next month, it'll be fresh year, only one column, even though some of the information will actually be in the fiscal year 19 audit. So we don't do like a super year-end budget.
So
this
is strictly, this one you said, this is strictly cash, right?
Correct.
There's no accrual, this is all.
Correct. Yep. Well, with the exception of utility billing, so technically it's like a modified cash basis, but everything other than utility billing charges is on a cash basis.
Utility billing is
so like when we
accrual?
Yeah, because we send out the final bills in April, and we're booking the receivable, we'll get the cash in May.
So you're showing here?
Correct. But everything else is
the
on the cash basis.
For April?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So other than that one number, everything else is cash?
Well, before it'll be refuse in the general fund, water sales and water. Infrastructure fees and water and sewer and citywide capital. But yeah, everything else is cash. So with the exception of those four line items, everything else is cash. Yes.
I'll still learn that.
I can send you an email about that and just highlight that for you if you'd like.
Yeah, I'll ask you 10 times.
Okay, fair enough.
I'm not saying don't do it. Sometimes I get asked 10 times.
Yeah. Rob, is it possible that just on the line item they can be asterisks?
Yeah, think you can, absolutely.
Yeah.
The
yeah,
four lines.
You can denote that, sure.
I mean, that's probably the easiest way just to have it is a quick note that those are the four that are on accrual basis as compared to cash.
No problem.
We will do, if not next month, in July, a sort of a year-end budget report, but they'll actually be like semi-audited figures. So we'll say like, this is what our auditors have turned up that we're reasonably certain are going to be the year-end numbers, but they're like, there's still 2% variance or whatever, and it might be based on journal entries.
What was it that's
somebody questioned at one of the budget talks where, I think you and I had talked about it, where we wanted to see a little bit more itemized, whereas maybe in one column, just making this up at this point, just for the scenario's sake, and you can, if it jogs your memory, where if you have one column that you're projecting will be at 98%, but then it comes in at 130% of where we were at, mm-hmm. and then we take that and we switch it to maybe we need the plow trucks or whatever. So then it moves to a different column, so then you never really see where it was or what it was going to be used for, as that could have been surplus because we jogged it off into a different column for to buy a new plow truck. Mm-hmm. Do you remember what I was talking about? Or, you know,
yeah, we were talking, it was based on a budget amendment.
Yes, that's right.
It was a budget amendment that we had, and we made a change, and it affected what the end result was for our line items.
Because it's not very clear when you look at it, because it would be here, but then we're shuffling that money around over here, and so it doesn't.
Yeah,
not very clear, I guess.
We might be able to explain that just with like a cover memo type narrative. I know Rob does a real nice like 2 to 3 page high level thing when he does his quarterly budget report kind of summaries. Maybe that's the most appropriate because the budget amendments are infrequent anyway. Yeah. To just kind of say like, you know, we used to show this, we did this, this is now what it shows type of thing.
Okay.
That's what you're talking about, right? Like,
I think, just the way that it appears from cover face is that it's kind of smoke and mirrors.
Okay.
You don't know exactly what you're getting here because you shuffled it over here to buy a new plow truck or whatever.
Okay.
Whereas, and we understand what's going on.
Right, because within the budget line, you might see, you know, we're supposed to be 100% for each of the two lines, but we might end up at 80% here and 120% on the next line.
Oh,
just within because
we're taking that surplus and using it.
From,
so you're saying that if we end up overspending in one line item, the corresponding cut to, like, you know, offset it. That's what you're looking for.
Pretty much, yeah. Right. If you have a surplus in one, we're going to take it to buy the plow trucks. The plow truck money's not coming out of the cash reserve or whatever.
Yeah. So we always end up coding the expenditure to the appropriate line item. So if it's like, I don't know, computers, and we end up ordering 10 more computers than we have budgeted or whatever, that line item will just show as over expended. And so probably the best way to show what we did to offset that is to just put the narrative together.
Okay.
Or like, you know, if you ask me, like, why is this over? And I'd be like, well, you know, it's over 10 grand. We ended up having this project got deferred or it was under budget or something. So we're considering that to kind of be the offset.
Okay.
That's probably more of like a management budgeting directive from the mayor as to like, you know, how we want to show things that come up that are unanticipated.
Yeah.
And how we're controlling that.
And I understand that, like on our HOA, we always have something like that pops up where they'll move stuff around a little bit, and somebody always has a question on it.
So. Yeah, and one of the things the mayor has already talked to us about is just like contingency planning. So, I mean, we used to have like a line item in the budget that said contingency, and it was like $150,000. And what happened was you'd go through the year, and people would be like, what is this? But like, well, it's not really for anything. It's for stuff that comes up. And then, you know, somebody would be like, oh, we want to replace these chairs again, and let's spend $10,000 out of the contingency line item. So the auditors and budget people would say, like, don't show it as a formal line item necessarily in the budget, because then that inflates your expenditure totals, like, each year. So it looks like you're spending more money than you're actually, like, planning. But there's some different things that we can do with, like, budget reports, financial charts, and the audit, and maybe even the fund balance policy to actually show that in there is like, you know, here's a contingency line item only for these like unanticipated expenditures. And then, you know, so you've got some money planning there, and then like, you know, when you see it in the budget report, we can just say like, yes, this money was overspent, but we used some of our fund balance or some of our contingency line item to be able to do it. So.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes,
my ass. Others. Thank you. And Bart, you may have addressed this when I was looking around here. The Kendall Marketplace Business District Tax.
Yep.
What's in there? Kohl's was in there, or Kohl's was in there. Dick's was in there. Kohl's in there.
Yeah.
Is Target in there?
Yeah, it's everything that's on that entire quadrant.
The entirety of.
So that, when did Dick's close? January 1 or something like that?
Yeah.
So that 10% drop is not just the last few months of Dick's being gone.
Yeah, and
something else
what we've said in general terms to the committee, because they're not allowed to see the individual store returns, is that, you know, the Dick's loss is, you know, it's money, but it's not a material dollar amount where it's like, you know, we need to...
That wasn't that 10%. 4 months of Dick being closed.
Without looking at it like specifically, I can't say for sure, but it, okay. Yeah, it's, I mean, it's not a whole lot of money. Okay. It was less money than I anticipated when I actually saw the number. You will be privy to the street level details, so I can show it to you after we pass the reciprocal.
Right. Agreement. And that sales tax is a wash, in essence, because it comes into the general fund, but it also comes out and gets sent to the Bank of New York to fund debt service out there. There's a bond associated with the business district tax for Kendall Marketplace.
So that $367,000 is...
Yeah, it comes into the general and then it comes out of admin services.
So, but there's got to be a point where either we owe more to that or we have surplus. I mean, you can't have an agreement that the Bank of New York takes that money forever.
Right. And we have a term on that one.
Correct.
We're at some point... Well, I know we at times have looked over the different TIF districts. For their values and how they're performing.
Yeah. The Kendall Marketplace bond deal is set up such that if there's excess, it ends up paying down the bond sooner. So as far as I know, though, I don't know that it's been deficient ever, but it has been underperforming is probably a fair statement. And it's actually if I remember correctly, it's a waterfall agreement between that and the SSA, and then... their normal sales tax incentives. It's like a three-pronged incentive deal when that property was created. And so that's just one component of it. So if for some reason it ends up overperforming, some of the excess funds go to pay down the SSA.
Is it a type of alternate revenue bond then?
I think so.
Against it. Yeah. I'll have to tell
but
you.
But it's a non-committal bond, too. The city's not on the hook.
True.
Yeah. Fault, so
it's on them.
Right.
So it's their tax for the business development, and then they have...
So it's not a general tax to hold them.
Yeah, it's not going to come back to us if it underperforms.
Right, so it wouldn't be an alternate revenue.
Right.
It would be something else.
Yeah.
Well, it's conduit, and we're a pass-through agency.
Yep.
I'll have to look into that with you, Jude, where we don't bog down the meeting, but that's just stuff I can understand.
Sure.
That's what I'm telling people I can understand.
And then as we close some of these out, you know, I know we had some changes on our inspections. That was way up because we made the change through the year. We're 1,800% because of the additional contracting we brought on. Those kind of things in the year-end review, I know that'll be in your report probably, Rob, for picking up those kind of things. That'll be good to see why and the brief summary of those kind of things, why we're so far off. But most of them, I could probably pinpoint what they are, but it's good to have it right. Anything else on the report? This does go to council for approval, consent, which will be...
Budget reports are just informational. They do get forwarded along.
Forwarded on.
Yeah. Yeah, the tracking document is set up correctly.
Okay. Yeah. So consent doesn't matter, it's just for invoice.
Yep.
Okay.
Treasurer's report and the...
State cash statements? Or
no. Actually, the treasurer's report is the only thing that moves on. Everything else is informational.
Okay.
We'll make sure that gets...
Did you just look at revenues in here? Is that typically what you do?
In the budget report?
Or in this committee or whatever you just...
Well, we've got revenues and expenditures all in this. It can all be gone through, and then we actually have the bill list in here. A little later down. I mean, everything is...
I'm trying to understand what you typically do.
Yeah, it's...
Trying to change it.
It's anything that we have, we can go through, we can delve into them.
So somebody has a question to ask.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. I would say we probably spend 80% of our time talking about revenue.
Yeah.
But...
I mean, obviously, the expenditures are very important, but it's, you know... We keep a close eye on how the revenues are performing. And then we make sure that all of our expenditures are appropriate.
Thank you.
Anything else? Are we prepared to move on? 2019 monthly treasurer's report for March and April 19.
March 31st, 2019, beginning fund balance of $11,544,948. Year-to-date revenues of $29,387,187. Year-to-date expenses of $28,272,261. We're projected ending fund balance of $12,659,874. Month ending April 30, 2019, beginning fund balance of $11,544,948. Year-to-date revenues of $31,843,184. Year-to-date expenses of $29,978,667. For a projected ending fund balance of $13,409,465.
Did you know where to go?
For what?
For
that report.
Yeah, we have it bookmarked.
Yeah.
Oh. In here, it's a lot easier because you just click right on it. You know.
I don't know on there.
No, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. You're like,
on here.
So he just read, I'm sorry.
Oh, he skipped a bunch
of totals. So this is March, and then the next one is April.
See,
towards
the end,
I'm going to
do this, like, tracking document.
Yeah, I see. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it's a lot easier. I didn't bring the tablet, but I didn't think about it. But I know this stuff is all online.
If you had that in advance, you know, post-its.
Yeah.
I've tried that at times. Yeah. It's break ashes. But
doing it on the computer is so much easier.
With the bookmarks.
Right.
They've done a nice job. I have to learn more.
So in here, we have it.
That's kind of slick.
Any questions or comments on the treasurer's reports?
And again, you don't want to get this detail here.
I know this is the first time you're kind of delving into them.
I actually, when I was riding the bus to the zoo,
you were looking through them. Okay.
Okay. Yeah, I'm just trying to understand these enterprise funds because the fees we charge the users aren't even close to these revenue numbers. So where do those other revenues come from? I think we have 1.2 million budgeted fees or revenues, something like that.
Yeah, water, I mean, the main revenue source is water sales, but there's a fair amount of water connection fees. When somebody builds a house, they pay the connection fee. The infrastructure fees are included in there, too. So that's like, you know, the $4.25 or $8 or whatever it ends up being bi-monthly.
There's a little bit of, you know, investment earnings. There's rental income for the cell towers on top of water.
I thought the revenue line I was reading somewhere in here was like $1.2 million, $1.1 million for that.
It should tie into the budget reports and the actual budget.
We'll go over that some other time.
I was going to say, so just real quick, when you're looking at enterprise funding, you see the 51. You should be able to track that back to the 51 section of, if you want to flip into that.
Then it'll correspond with that line item. Over there, you see the numbers in there.
So you'll see the 51 section. Those should correlate.
Prefix.
Those are the bills list.
Oh, yeah,
now the bills. So if you go back here.
You're talking about budget code.
Correct. Right? Okay. The budget code is on that part. Same code everywhere you go.
Yeah, I just don't remember seeing those match up.
No. It might be depending on what month you're looking at. So you have to look up here and then go to the corresponding month of your budget, the treasurer's report.
Okay, I'll figure that out some other time. I don't want to bog you all down. I'm going to figure this out, but it just won't be tonight.
I've done this one a few times, so. Any other comments on that one?
We'll know by next April.
Yeah. All right. And this one, you said, does go on to
City Council
for approval. Mm-hmm. Any questions or comments? Anybody or everybody okay with this moving on for approval?
Sure.
All right. And we're not going to be doing on consent. We'll take it for a roll. Okay. 2019-20 cash statement for February and March 2019.
These are informational, as always. Cash balances on the first page and investment balances on the second page. Questions?
Any comments on these questions? We're still within our secured limits on all of our accounts per policy. see, it looks like we're still making profit on our CDs.
What do you do on the maturity date on some of those CDs? Do you go out and look for new?
Yeah, we use PMA, rates? And they scour the country essentially for FDIC insurance.
BMA or BOA?
PMA. PMA. Out of Naperville, they stand for Prudent Man Advisors.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, they're our brokered CD agent.
Okay.
We're with them. We're brokered, or they're our broker, but we go with them for a term, or we just.
Well, we have a collateralized deposit account with PMA oversees it with Associated Bank. Mm-hmm. And then we also, yeah, they go out and they look for different CD rates and bring it to my attention. And yeah.
So if we come across something or if they come across something at a time that we feel it's a good move, we can always change that, move it out, or look at them. Because they know, like here, we have no idea when they come to maturity.
Well, we do. I mean, every
well, we don't see that then. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's like one just was it's 329, right. And yeah. There's another one at 617 that matures.
We have one that's coming out.
Yeah.
Is that something you guys have already started looking out and talking about, or not yet?
Well, as we get closer to June, they'll start sending out different rate sheets of differing terms with differing interest rates.
So they already do that. We work with PMA, and then once something comes close to term, they're already reshopping and trying to get
the best. Yeah, they're basically managing all of it.
Nice. Right.
Did they do a good job with it?
Yeah, I think so.
And it's free services, probably?
No, I mean, they get a cut off the top, so it's not like we're actually paying them anything. They just, whatever rate they show me is net of their fees, and they're competitive.
Yeah.
I mean, 2.5% or thereabouts for a year CD that's FDIC insured is about what the market's yielding right now.
Yeah, I would agree.
So, Bart and Rob, you wanted, and I don't know if you want to talk about all that, but what was that thing you were throwing out that you were looking at maybe some other investment opportunities?
Well, the first one was a local government pool called Illinois Trust. And the primary reason why I was recommending Illinois Trust is it provides us an alternative to PMA because they have a local government pool. But once you get access to the pool, they also, sell brokered CDs. So my rationing was being that, if we can get a CD that's yielding 2.6%, 10 basis points higher than what PMA is offering, it's all FDIC insured, so there's no risk of default. Why not, utilize that? And then the other issue was with PMA. Nothing was really going to change with PMA per se, but right now they use BMO Harris to move money in and out of the account that we have at Associated. They're actually creating their own local government investment pool called iPrime. So now the default mechanism to move money in and out of that funds would just be iPrime. Now, we're not obligated to invest in iPrime. We can if we want to, but we don't have to. And my intention was just to leave things as they are. We just need to sign that agreement in order to upgrade to their new platform.
What's the benefit of going to iPrime?
Well, it's going to offer a higher yield than what we get with the, the collateralized account at Associated, probably 20 basis points or something.
What is it, collateralized? That was a question I had for Bart.
Well, part of it is and part of it isn't. I mean, some of the investments in the pool are, backed by the full faith and credit of the United States government. Some of them are, bank CDs, but then there's other instruments as well, like commercial paper, AAA rated corporate bonds, which are not collateralized. But, the fund itself is AAA rated, so it's as, safe from a risk standpoint, in my opinion, as Illinois funds. I mean, all three of those funds I've listed, Illinois funds, Illinois Trust, and iPrime are AAA rated money market accounts.
But the one's not collateralized?
Right, no local government pool is fully collateralized.
Is there any benefit to go out for proposal on the services for this, or are we just work with them on an individual basis? That's what it sounds like we're doing right now, is you're just working with PMA. Do we see any benefits of going out for
proposals? Well, those are really the big three local government pools that are being offered right now in Illinois.
So you're basically talking to them one-on-one is what it sounds like.
Well, we had Illinois funds for years, and PMA is really just a matter of they're coming up with this new iPrime, which is part of their new platform to move money now. The funds, we don't have to change anything. We can leave our accounts collateralized at Associated Bank, and that'd actually be my recommendation.
To leave them for now?
Yeah, it's just that if we decide to move money in and out for that split second, it would be an iPrime as it moved in and then moved out. And it's pretty low risk consideration. They're just taking BMO Harris out of the picture and using it. And then, Illinois Trust, again, we could keep a minimal amount in Illinois Trust itself. What I'm really interested in is accessing the brokered CDs, because if we can get a higher rate, the same amount of risk, everything's FDIC insured, why not do it?
We will have full agreement for both of them, and we were going to vet it on our end. We haven't talked about it really in depth.
Okay.
Vet it with the mayor before it comes forward, too. So it is something that we plan on talking about in full at some point or another.
So that'll be in the next several months or something. Right. You might have something that we can look up.
Okay. I would anticipate by next month. Yeah, next month. I don't think it'll be much of a problem.
Okay.
In fact, we were ready to go at least from Rob's end.
I wasn't
had a chance to talk. Well, I haven't had a chance to talk to him.
No,
I haven't had a chance to talk to you yet about it.
So. Thank you.
All right. So that's for information that moves on to council, informational.
Correct. Yeah, it doesn't go on to the agenda.
Doesn't need to go on to the agenda. Okay. Great. I remember which is the information.
Same for the bills, although we vote on those now, so I don't know if you want to see this report again.
Okay, so you're saying, since we're voting on them now, this goes to council.
Yeah, so you're seeing everything retroactively. So when we weren't voting on it, we were producing the bill reports that did go to city council. They just weren't voted on for everybody's review after the fact. And we can continue to do that here. It's just like you've already voted on these things. So,
right, because the bill list, we have authorized those bills. By
the time they hit admin?
Yes, because that's by virtue of how we've done our budgets, and I'm trying to backtrack several years and how we made this transition to, we used to vote on them, we stopped voting on them, and then they were informational. But we've already authorized the expenditures for the bill list, because we've approved the budget, we've got those items in there, and that's why this comes to us after the fact. We're just seeing everything that has been expended through the month. Correct? Okay.
Yep.
So, we'll keep it on for here to see it, but it doesn't. We're going to be voting on it out of council unless we have a change. Right, that's what we're going to.
So, these bills that are in your packet include the ones you approved on Tuesday night.
Last night.
So, these have been in the past retroactively. So, we've usually not taken bills to committee and then to city council. Bills in the past had always just been thrown on the city council agenda and then listed there and then motioned and approved. So my question to you is, like, if you've already approved them, do you want to see them here again?
Yeah, so they're going to council before they come here. In that case, it's irrelevant to have them here, I guess.
Yep.
Okay. Everybody good with that? That bill list is going to be council and not committee?
That's fine, because we've already got them in the packets that were there for yesterday.
We're voting on it to approve them there, so if the questions are there, it's bring them to the staff in advance of council. Yeah. Okay.
So we're going to move that
50 pages. We're doing great.
Not for city council, though.
Right, it's going to be the city council packet. It just won't be in the committee packet.
I'm worried about me. I'm sorry.
The other way to do it is it goes from here first.
And then
it goes
council.
To council, but then we're on delay
an
extra couple weeks.
Well, yeah, and the problem is you only meet once a month.
Exactly.
Twice a month, too.
So we're saying
you can do it twice a month with council if you need to.
Have historically, yeah.
Yeah, and otherwise we're in the rears on reviewing and approving.
Yep.
So, all right, we're going to remove this one from committee. Admin 2019-22 monthly website report for March and April 2019.
We're on the upswing. So December is historically our lowest month for social media and website viewers. I think a lot of people take time off from social media. Our holiday information is, and our holiday events is usually done at the beginning part of December, end of November. So we are on the upswing. We are still gaining visitors. We are still gaining likes and followers. So that has not gone down since I started in 2016. So
we have Facebook.
Facebook and Twitter. And then we have 3 Facebook sites. We have a Marge Pine Whitewater Course site. We have Yorkville Parks and Recreation site. And then we have our city Facebook page as well. Just 1 Twitter. So you can see where people are visiting. We put 3 months or 2 months of history in the packet for you so you can browse, and you can also see searches and where refers are coming from. So things have been pretty consistent. I always like to see what people are searching, because now more and more we refer people who call here for questions on where can I find this. We just have them type it up in the search bar on our main website, so we don't have to walk them the steps through there. So we've been adding more and more nomenclature within the website, so there's more hits on the search bars too.
Who's responsible for updating the Facebook pages, posting things? That's you, Doodle?
There's a couple admins. Okay. So Parks and Rec staff mostly do their site. I mostly do the city site. Bart does as well. And then... Marge Klein is through Parks and Rec as well. But we all kind of look out for each other. We can all see who's messaging us. We can all see who's has questions or notifications, and then we can share it with whoever needs to be shared to.
Tim and Christy are also admins on the Facebook page, and I want to say there's one other, but I'm forgetting.
Hang on.
They typically don't use it. It's definitely here 95% of the time. Me maybe 3% of the time, and the others 1 or 2% of the time.
There's probably a big uptick since we took over YYBX, right?
No.
No? Mm-hmm. I would imagine, you would think, because it's such a hot...
Yeah, I mean, there's 500 additional kids and families that are doing it, mm-hmm. which is significant. It's one of our larger programs,
sure.
But in the context of soccer or basketball,
right.
It's a percentage uptick.
Yeah.
So the interesting thing, I know that we've talked about it at a very high level as part of our goals, and we've mentioned it to the committee before, but you guys wouldn't have heard it yet, is we're getting a lot of people that, as they are getting their news from Facebook and our Facebook page, are messaging us at all hours of the day and asking, like, serious questions. Or, like, they report, like, this manhole is missing. And it's like, okay.
On Facebook.
Oh, yeah, you need to call, like, 911.
Yeah.
Right. And, like, report that in.
Yeah.
But there's a different expectation with people that they expect us to be 24/7.
Right.
So one of the things we've talked about.
Response.
Yeah, is, like, hooking up, like, a back-end chatbot type thing. Mm-hmm. That if you had a whole bunch of municipalities that all went in together, like on a consortium basis, got a vendor who we've talked to that could, like, you know, actually work on machine learning, like, you might be able to cut down on some of those open-ended, like, overnight questions. But like, if you're saying, like, oh, there's a pothole here, like, you know, it gives you a link to the page or, like, says, hey, you need to call this number or whatever, and just increase the responsiveness. From like a customer service perspective, that's something we've talked about, like trying to do. It's interesting, like if you were to do that on a consortium basis, you'd probably only pay a couple $1,000s per year. And, you know, we're trying to do the financials on it to like see how much money of like staff time it would replace. And we think the ROI is going to be there like relatively quickly. So, you know, if you just think about like how much you pay a secretary for, you know, 2,000 hours a year, like if you've got somebody that can cut down on, I don't know, 100, overnight calls or requests for information through the website, like, and it costs you like $10,000. I mean, like, that's, you know, a couple weeks worth of a salary for a receptionist. So there's something that we're looking at in regards to that, just based on what we're starting to see is people expect us to, you know, be monitoring that thing all hours of the night. So
does Civic Plus have a module that would work with that? For our website, I know we've talked about kind of a refresher on the website, and I know they have the different mods. But
What we're talking about is more custom programming, machine learning, like.
But they don't have anything that could work in with that. Okay, I didn't know what their scope of. Yeah.
There's this website centric, and they even have problems with their modules working with Facebook. So there's it's a separate tool.
Because I know, like, our reporting, you know, the report thing, I know that's an issue, but since that's coming through other interfaces, I don't know if they were integrated. with that.
A lot of the other municipalities, especially the large ones, are seeing it too. It's just like people, you know, everybody subscribes to the Facebook page. It's super great. Like when power goes out, you can give all these updates, and everybody's already on Facebook posting about how their power is out. And like, what their neighbors are doing, and they see it. But then they expect you to be on there too, like asking, you know, answering the questions as they come up. So, it's not like a huge issue yet as far as perception goes, but. You know, I see it. It's like somebody's like, hey, this is occurring. There's a hole here, and somebody's going to fall in it. Like, can you send somebody out now? It's like...
It's 2 in the morning.
Page. Yeah. So, yeah. So for whatever that's worth.
I've also been noticing different in algorithms, too, with Facebook especially. And I've been trying to do multiple posts. So if you get annoyed by seeing several posts on the same items, I'm going to test it next 2 weeks from now with the garbage service delay. Our highest viewed post in April was about the white goods bulk item pickup. Several people mentioned on the comments through one of the posts that they didn't know about it until garbage was already gone that week when I had posted it 2 or 3 times the week prior. So it's just what your algorithms pick up on your news feed. And so I've been playing around with it, just trying to get more hits so that everybody's aware.
But all this information is already on the website.
Correct.
Right? So if you really want to know, you can find it. You don't have to go on Facebook and wait for someone to respond to it.
Every survey we've done over the past 10 years, I mean, people are using websites, dedicated websites, less and less to get the news.
United City of Yorkville? Yeah. Like, that's too long.
It's hard.
It's inconvenient.
Yeah, and unless...
Is that Surrey?
You know, you've got... I know there are several very active HOA neighborhood Facebook sites online, and they do a lot, you know.
Sharing and...
I've actually gotten into each of the neighborhoods that are not even my own. That's a whole different issue. And they've let me in. But it's a whole big issue, and you know, they, you know, if you share the information, they definitely have some neighborhoods that are very active in trying to promote that. But still, I mean, it still doesn't percolate through, depending on what their settings are and what the way that Facebook has changed their algorithms to allow and not allow information to come through. It's actually, I think, hurting more than it's doing good because it's filtered out so much. And it's kind of like taking out what they consider spam. Which is hurting us.
They want you to pay for it.
Yes, they want you to pay for it. That's exactly what it is. Anything else on the Facebook or Twitter side? I do have a comment on the website. Can we get some of the analytics on the duration, length on each, you know, kind of average stay and clicks through our site as compared to, you know, clicks to external sources. I'd like to kind of see if we can start tracking how long are they staying on. What are, you know, are they clicking through multiple points, or are they directly finding what they want and then leaving?
So I've done a little bit of, if you just want to hear my 2 cents on every quickly, because I can go through it anytime.
I know
the
analytics, they're all there.
Yeah. So people do not stay on the site, and people do not click on the site. And that's why in almost every Facebook post and every tweet we put out, we have a direct link to one page, because that has been the trend more and more, and that if people have to click through multiple
times,
because
they're getting it from social media to the site.
Correct.
Me, doing my own.
Or a newsletter link, or whatever link it is. And if people have to click through multiple, they're going to call. So we try to give that direct information every time. Otherwise, we lose them or it's not important to go through. But I can get you the minutes of stay.
Yeah, if we can get a little bit on that there, just to try to kind of see what they're doing. I think it's going to play into the potential for redesign on the website.
Absolutely.
And how we want to look at that and approach that. I use the website extensively because I'm doing my own research, and if I can't find what I'm looking for, Bart knows about it.
True.
And we try our best to keep it up to date, but if anybody sees anything,
and,
you
helped me out with even the document center, the portal, in order to get the everything I need out of it. So, but I know the general public, a lot of information is too deep to get to, and if you do general searches on the site, you're coming up with stuff that's hidden. That just populates.
And that's why we try to update our tags.
Absolutely.
And our metadata to reflect that.
Okay.
We try to. And then, just so everybody's aware, staff will embark on the redesign. Same information, just new look in June.
Okay. Any other questions on the website, social media? That's informational for us on that one. Okay. Moving on. Admin 2019-23 required reporting to municipality by Yorkville Police Pension Board.
Robin. This is the annual report that we present every year. It shows the actuarial evaluation conducted by the city, which is Exhibit A, MWM Consulting, and it compares it to the actuarial evaluation done by the Illinois Department of Insurance. The MWM report was presented to City Council last fall as part of the tax levy process.
Item 6.
And then the memo just kind of highlights the different sections. I always like to look at Section 3. You know, based on the MWM actuary evaluation, it shows that the city's contribution is going to be a little over $1.1 million this year, and that's the exact amount that we levied last fall, so that'll be directly remitted to the pension funds over the next 6 months or so as we get property taxes in from the county. That was an increase of about $150,000. You know, there's three reasons, kind of bullet point below, as to why it went up as much as it did. You know, we get closer to 2040, there's less time to amortize those costs. You know, as normal costs increase each year, another year of benefits is accrued, so that goes on to the liability as well. And then, you know, most importantly, the rate of return did fall short of our benchmark. We benchmark at 7%, and the rate of return came in at 5.43% last year.
So on that, we're 1.5% short on that one there. Obviously, that has a significant impact on that, and even the IDOI, they said 6.25% is what they...
That's what they target, yeah.
What their target was. Is that something we need to make an adjustment on?
Well,
I should in moving forward?
Maybe. There's a couple of things that we need to consider. I mean, first of all, the year before, we actually did beat the benchmark.
I think I remember that.
Yeah, we were at 7.06%. So we do have a history of beating that benchmark. So this year we didn't. And the reason partially why we didn't beat it is because it's going to change this year. But back in fiscal year 18, when this analysis was done, the pension fund itself had net assets less than $10 million. So we were required by state statute we couldn't go any higher than 45% in equities. So the bulk of the portfolio was in bonds. Now, if you look on the second page, you know, doing a money-weighted rate of return, the equities yield about 11.39%, but the bond, the fixed income side of the portfolio, a little bit over 1%, so that's why it kind of pulled it down below that threshold. But now that the pension fund, as of September, actually exceeds $10 million, the board and I have been in the process of reallocating the portfolio, so now we're more heavy on the equity side. Because we're over $10 million, we can go up to 65% in equity and only 35% in bonds. Equity, as you know, is obviously going to yield a much higher rate of return over time than bonds, so we're hoping that we can more consistently beat that 7% benchmark in the future, which is certainly going to level off the amount of the, you know, that the city has to contribute each year to the pension fund.
So this is probably just somewhat of a fluke, because we had over 7% prior year, but this year we're below.
So I guess to answer your question,
it's a crapshoot in terms of what we really are going to yield. But
it's always a crapshoot, to be honest with you. But I'm hopeful that now that we're mostly in equity, we should get a bit of better return on our investment. Now, if that doesn't come to fruition, you know, we got like 2-3 years in a row, we're still falling short of that benchmark. It may be something we want to consider. Because keep in mind, we are investing for the long term. And this isn't operating funds. These are, you know, pension funds, which invest out 40, 50 years. But, you know, I'm hopeful that now that the portfolio is mostly in equity, that we'll start to, you know, beat and exceed that benchmark.
Because I know if we do fall short, I know where that money comes from, generally.
Yeah.
Like, if we're short, if we don't make it, we have an obligation, so that's going to come out of general. So I want to be cautious. Because I know we've done that in past years. Yes.
Who actually decides which stocks or bonds to invest in? Do we have a management?
Well, yeah. They use Great Lakes Advisors for the equity side of portfolios. We use Mitchell, Vaught, and Taylor for the fixed income side. The pension board.
But the pension board sets the policy within the state statute.
Correct.
Okay. And where? What percent did I see?
When's the last time the pension had the higher equities as opposed to bonds?
We just now, I mean, are allowed to do that because as of last September, we've exceeded that $10 million mark.
When's the last time it was in excess of the $10 million mark?
But never.
Never? So yeah, this is the first time the pension can move to equities as opposed to bonds.
Correct. Correct. That we can go to the 65% threshold versus the 45% previously.
Yes. So this is a big change that we've had.
So we're at 47%? Is that what I'm saying?
Yeah. The good news is that the pension fund did increase. So we were at 42% and now we're currently at 47%. Obviously, as we do the audit, we'll do another actuary evaluation. As we get closer to tax levy time, we'll have a new actuary evaluation. We'll get kind of updated where we are.
Who does that?
This firm called MWM Consulting.
Okay. So the target current ramp is it 90% or is it 100%?
100%.
It's 100% by 2040.
Our policy is 100%, yeah.
State
statute's 90 by 2040.
As long as we meet our required contribution each year, you know, we'll be 100% by 2040. And we're a relatively young fund.
Mm-hmm. We are. We've only been, I think 2002 was when the fund was created.
What was it before that?
IMRF.
Yes, we were required to do police pension funds because we were small.
Under 5,000, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that was something that was kicked in 2002. How's our IMRF fund? What rate is that funded at?
Well, I heard they had a monster year. We were at 89 and then went up to 97, so I would say we're somewhere in the 90% range.
Yeah, IMRF as an organization is like one of the better funded pension systems in the country.
But there's still each organization has...
Well, you're required to kick in whatever their...
Right, but each one has its own accounting. You know, it's not 90% across the board. You might be 90.
Right.
The county might be 88. Another town might be 97. It's not 90 across the board. Each entity has its own sub-account, we'll call.
You're right. We do. But it's
within a couple of percentage points.
It's around that 90% mark.
Because basically what happens is, like, for some reason they do a recalculation, or for some reason, like, you manage to not pay what you're required to, they end up taking it from you via state disbursement for the next year. When they sue you. So there has been a couple of years where, like, I don't know, did we ramp in? Like, we chose to do, like, a voluntary, like,
five-year
ramp.
Yeah, when the market collapsed in, 2008, I know they offered, like a phase-in rate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then we actually had, like, a small, like, liability that I think we paid off in 24. It was only, like...
$200,000 or something like that.
I think it was less than that. Right. It was accruing 7% interest, so it wasn't much. We just paid that off. But, yeah, now we don't have anything like that.
Have you ever looked at... I don't want to say overfunding because you're not 100% funded, but have you ever looked at paying more than is required and done the analysis of how that would impact subsequent years?
For the police pension?
For either.
Not for IMRF. I mean, for the police pension, we usually just do the required contribution because we are shooting for that 100% target by 2040. And keep in mind, the more we put to the police pension, the less we have for city purposes.
Sure.
So we're trying to,
the more you put it now, the less you have to put it in the future. So it might allow you to have more monies for future levies.
But also, if the equities return at a higher yield, you'll be able to reach that 100% before that 2040 threshold, right?
Yeah.
Theoretically,
if it continues to exceed 7%. Yeah.
Right.
Right, and where are we getting 7%? You just showed us you want to get 2.5 or 2.6%. So not something we're going to decide today if we do anything. Something I just started discussing with the finance committee at the county earlier this year. We didn't do anything.
The CDs are 2.5% and 2.6%, but the equities are like stocks and stuff.
And we returned 5.43. We missed the benchmark, but our CDs, this is a separate issue for the city. They yield about 2.5%. But
I understand it, but my point is if you took that 2.5% and were able to get 6.5% or 7%, there's going to be, you're just going to have your future liabilities going to go down at a quicker rate, which means perhaps your contribution for the following year's levies won't be as great. So, we're not going to decide here, but I think it's worth something. It's something worth looking at. Discussing.
How the police are the only ones who are not IMRF in terms of municipal employees. Everyone else is IMRF?
Yes, correct.
Are you vested?
I am.
How many years did you get in?
I vested under the old system. So
8 years?
8 years.
And then you got the heck out?
No, I'm still contributing because I'm a salaried conflict attorney for DeKalb County.
Oh, so that's IRF too?
It is. It's required, yeah.
Tier one?
Yeah.
Yeah, under the old plan, yeah. So I vested about a year and a half ago, maybe?
I'm IRF too.
Yeah.
Echo.
Oh, that's the old one.
Well, not the old Echo.
Okay.
The second Echo. For whatever it's worth.
Right. It's not worth much, but it's nice knowing that it's there and it's not going to get eliminated or swiped away by a pen stroke.
I might. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, they can.
These two guys are like, okay, let's move on. All six of them are like, let's move on.
I'm close to being invested, actually.
What's that? What'd you say?
I said I'm close to being invested.
So the report does get passed on to City Council. It shows up on the treasurer's report, correct, usually?
Yeah, and then also it'll go to the police pension board as well. Have them sign the phone.
Does it require a vote, or is it on there? Just
I think it's just informational. Okay.
This is informational to the council?
Yeah, but it will show up on a future agenda.
Okay. Any other questions or comments on the report? Okay, we'll move that on.
20 minutes, huh, Bart?
Yeah, what's wrong with that?
I wasn't here last one.
Forgot to do the multiplier.
I wasn't here either. Factor. So the more you ask questions, the more I understand about this. So I'm glad to be here, and I'm glad we're taking the time to educate me on this as well. So
sure. Most of these would have gone through in 20 minutes, but yeah, this it's good discussion.
Backstory. Yep.
Definitely. So what we need to do anyway. So and our last agenda item. 2019-24 travel authorizations for 2020.
Yeah, there's a nice memo in your packet. We've got three travel authorizations for the upcoming fiscal year. INL conference, which is in September in Chicago, and we usually authorize everybody to go for 3 nights. The Metro West Legislative Drive Down, which is an overnight trip to Springfield, usually in the spring, where we invite, again, everybody to go. Go down and lobby your legislators. And then the ICSC conference, which is the country's largest retail convention. It's in Las Vegas each year in May. We're actually going next week to that, which was authorized last year. And then the fourth bonus component is last year's authorization for this year's Las Vegas conference. We actually estimated the airfare at a little bit less than what it actually came out to be, so we have to do an amendment to the mayor's authorization for this year. So the quick backstory on it is the new state law from like a year and a half ago, there were a lot of issues with travel and entertainment expenditures, so the state said each municipality has to pass this travel-type policy that says any overnight stays and then travel costs associated with elected officials have to be voted on in open session of each board. So we created this policy. That's why we do it. We usually just do it once a year. We just wrap it into our budget process as to what has historically been done. So even though the authorization is like $25,000 for the IML conference, historically it's about half of that or much less, just depending on who can go each year and how expensive it ends up being.
Who's going to Vegas next week?
The mayor, I, and Lynn Dubacek.
So so we've got the four in here. The first one is the redo.
Yep.
Mayor Galinsky's prior one. So even though it says estimate the 450,
so that, we put that in there just as an illustration.
Okay.
Of last year's authorization.
So that was last year's authorization, yep. But we're sending it forward to put it in as the actual
amendment.
And then we have the recon. This is the one that's going to be coming up.
And we estimated the per diem meal as the maximum amount allowed under the employee manual. So that part of it is an estimate.
So some days you're going to eat more than others?
Yes, in general.
Okay.
They don't do $2 steak buffets anymore, but
it's like 99-cent trip cocktails on the old strip.
Yeah, depends on where you're at.
There is.
Might
get sick, but...
It's Vegas.
Crawfish.
I've seen one 99-cent trip cocktail enthusiast eat a few and not get sick, so yeah. Not me.
I try not to eat anywhere off of the strip, one block either way. A little risky once you start getting out there. Yeah, I have standards. All right, and then the last one is the IML. We have that for the 3 nights, obviously.
Yep.
We have anybody that stays for the third, for the Saturday night.
It's been 1 to 2 a year. Just depending on people's personal schedules, whether they're actually going to go to the Saturday afternoon events and then the Saturday
when is that thing?
Event.
November?
September.
That's one down in Springfield.
So, yeah.
Chicago.
Oh, Chicago. Okay.
Jeez.
That one in Springfield's in the spring.
Yes.
Yeah. Line up the Bears game.
So that starts on Thursday, Friday, and then a potential for Saturday.
Yep.
And we have, in fact, had people on Saturday.
So, yep.
Okay.
So there's Saturday afternoon things, and then there's usually a Saturday night, ball, closing ball.
Yeah, I know there's it's not the governor's dinner, but it's something, president's dinner?
Yeah.
I think it's the president's dinner, and then they have several kind of group functions, but in terms of Saturday, there are not many classes. I don't think I've ever
you
seen
know on the dates of that,
aren't
you?
September 19th,
2021.
Oh,
okay. Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
Yeah. I'm just wondering because, what is the value of our third day? I know we've never gotten all the way up to the $20,000+ mark on this because, you know, first of all, not everybody goes down. Second of all, not everyone stays the whole time. So I know we just got a worst case scenario on this thing. But what are we getting out of Saturday is kind of where I'm going.
So my common disclaimer is going to be the council can decide whatever they want to do for their own travel policies. That's fine. That's, you know, kind of your own self-regulation. From a staff level perspective, I would say that if somebody is expected to go and is willing to go to classes at the tail end of a conference all the way through, like, the end of close of business, and then there was an event that night that they said that they were going to go to, it would be reasonable for us to expect them to stay overnight. Mm-hmm. So just as like a, you know, we don't want you getting out of this thing after spending all day and then driving home or whatever.
Yeah.
Especially when checkout's at 11, but you can't check out because you're in the conference. Yeah. So.
Exactly. And, and so, yeah, some of these, I mean, I know there have been times when I have just left, you know, it's not stayed. It just depends on how everybody's schedules are. I just don't know. I didn't know how much we had anybody staying on Saturday or, you know, taking advantage of that.
So you budget for X amount, but then what do we do if we don't use it? I mean, where is that fund?
General fund. Is it general fund?
Okay. So there's actually two metrics here. One is the maximum amount we approve in here. Our budget amount is actually less.
Okay.
So we approve it, assuming the worst case scenario, but historically we've got our budget.
We're budgeting at what, 10, 12, 15,000.
Yeah. And if for some reason everybody went all three nights and you guys were okay with that and it was $3,000 or $4,000 over what we had budgeted, you know,
then we come back afterwards and
there's no need to prove again.
Correct.
Okay.
Do you want to take out the last night for yourself?
Well, I'm just.
I think what you're trying to figure out is whether or not that third night is necessary
is
if
it?
Only one person uses it every couple years.
Right, because I've never stayed the last one.
But it doesn't really matter, though.
It's not prepaid.
We're not spending it unless.
Right.
Now, if somebody's going to get benefit out of it, I don't want to take that away from them. Because I know that there are some classes. I always go through, check the schedules, and see if there is anything. And, you know, if there's not, then we'll
just allow a few people to do
it. Makes them because this is just allowing for the maximum expenditure for all three. It's not saying that we're obligating you to go for the whole time, but it's giving them that option if they find something beneficial. I know
the option
is funny. On Saturday morning, there's always been something that is beneficial to either police or to clerks. Almost always, I think I found something that, in terms of that kind of thing, it doesn't benefit me as much.
Sure.
You know, so that's where sometimes
unless you're on the public safety committee or.
Well, yeah, I mean, but if you're talking, once you get into the nitty gritty of it, those are intended for staff level. And I've jumped in on some of those sessions ever so often.
So do you know what the schedule is for this fall?
There's general information.
They won't post the detail, yes.
But they don't have the actual classes all broken out yet. So
Are you okay with this number for now, then? Is that
I mean, since we're just doing maximum, I just wanted to know, are we taking advantage of it? And if people are taking advantage of it occasionally, I don't want to discourage that.
And this is probably we should be speaking to the other aldermen about whether or not it's necessary.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, if someone's going to get benefits, you know, now, we're talking $250+ a night.
But to your point, Chris, Alderman Funkhauser, this does not obligate
it does not
us to spend, so
right.
Why not just have the money there and if somebody wasn't taking advantage of it?
Exactly.
The only thing this does is it dumps back into the general fund balance, which is not a bad thing.
So again, though, the authorization itself is
20,700
Yeah. Plus. So we don't budget for that dollar amount, just knowing that it's never going to come there.
Right.
You know, and it wouldn't be a big deal for us to figure out how to spend it. So,
if we spend every dollar, then that line would go over. Or you'd amend the budget.
Theoretically, yeah. I mean, but the line item itself contains other conferences and stuff, so if I don't go to a conference or something, then, you know, then it gets off track. No, I mean, there's regional conferences that kidding. I think I'm going to go to, and then I don't end up going.
Yeah, schedules happen, and things don't, you know, so it could all equalize. I mean, everybody plus could go to this. Okay. I'm good with it then, you know, let's... We'll move that forward. This goes to council for approval.
Yeah, it does require a vote.
Anybody
public vote? You said.
Yep.
Yeah.
Anybody have any issues on that?
I do like that. I think the people should know when they're sending their elected officials out of town what they're doing and how much they're spending.
Ottawa.
Ottawa. I don't think no one's going to care if you go to Ottawa.
All right. So we will move that forward. Okay. Now, last thing, additional business. Anybody have any additional business for the committee?
I've given you too much already.
I have one item. Wanted to follow up on clerk transition. Obviously, Lisa has assumed the duties. Now, with that, I know we've made adjustments in terms of, you know, Rob taking over the treasurer's duties. Now, where are we at with that in terms of any stipend or anything for the additional responsibilities and duties for deputy clerk now? Clerk.
Yeah, so the stipend is set by city code, hasn't actually changed. As city clerk, then she is receiving the $3,600 currently, annually plus $100 per meeting fee, which she had as deputy clerk. We are not backfilling the deputy clerk stipend, so that $1,000 ends up going away and not being spent. The actual salary of the employee that underpins that is a separate job description. Is up to mayoral review. You know, we talked about some things today, haven't finalized anything, so that would be kind of a separate conversation.
Because I don't know if I spoke to you about it, I think I may have spoke to you about it. Is this something that we adjust the salary of the clerk, or it's done as a stipend as a whole, you know, knowing that these services could be done with other persons at other times, if we bring on additional staff or we wanted to assign it to somebody else, what would be the thoughts on that?
So our proposal currently is to leave it as an underlying full-time employee position with a job description, titled executive assistant / city clerk, but then the actual person who's appointed as city clerk would receive the stipend. So theoretically, there could be a scenario in the future. You know, you grow five times higher, you know, you get a whole bunch of people in there. You know, you could have somebody who's not that job description being the city clerk.
Okay.
So it's
I just want to make sure that we have that flexibility, that it's not just put into a salary, that those responsibilities can be stipend elsewhere if necessary.
Yep.
Good. Okay. And everything has gone smoothly with that transition, I assume?
I did it last night. Yeah. Well, at least I thought it did. I don't think it got this long meeting, but now you're in day two thinking this is a long meeting too. Gotta be used to it, guys. Ladies, sorry.
All right. Any other questions or comments? Additional business?
Not for me.
We'll adjourn at 7:14.